I have a secret.
Uh-huh.
I use Secret Whole Body Deodorant because more than just my armpits stink.
Oh, can I use it where my bra rubs under my...
Oh, yeah.
And what about down there? You know, my...
Totally. 4 out of 5 gynecologists would recommend it. So I tried it, and now I get 72 hours of freshness. From my pits to my...
Ooh, I love that it's a spray.
Me too. And it comes in sticks and creams too. Go get your Secret Whole Body Deodorant.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Okay, welcome to the show. It is Unsportsmanlike here on ESPN Radio, ESPN2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Along with Michelle Smallman, Chris Canty, Evan Cohen with you. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Tiger. 1 under yesterday through 13 at the Masters. How are we doing this morning?
I'm doing good. I'm not sure how Tiger Woods is going to be doing after 23 holes of golf that he's going to have to play today. My goodness.
That's a lot for somebody that's banged up.
That's what I'm saying. He's got 5 more holes to go to finish the first round. Then he's got an hour break. Then around, what is it? I think he said there's probably going to be somewhere around 11 o'clock he's going to start his second round, 12 o'clock, whatever that is. Man, that is a lot of golf.
What's the most amount of golf that you guys have ever played in one day? Have you ever done more than 18 in one day?
No. Never. No. Nor do I want to.
No.
The look that both of you are giving me. I mean, Michael Jordan would play, what, like 36 in the morning and then play at night?
Yeah, that's because he would try to recoup in the second round what he lost in the first round.
He was actually playing with Ohtani's translator. It was amazing.
Wow, yeah, exactly. Sources close to the situation.
Yeah, I mean, allegedly.
Allegedly.
But this does give us some juice here with the Masters. Not that the Masters needs extra juice. It's the Masters. But Tiger's in the mix today.
I don't think we can say that Tiger doesn't add juice to anything.
Yes,
Tiger being in the hunt or being in the conversation adds juice to anything, especially the Masters. The fact that he's 1 under, he hasn't done that since 1999. I mean, it's been a minute. And anytime that you can talk about Tiger Woods being in the mix and potentially winning another major, more eyeballs and more attention are going to come to the product. And I hope he stays like this, guys. I want Tiger to be able to win another major. More than anything in sports, maybe.
Yeah, the most important thing for Tiger Woods right now is that he continues to putt the way that he has. He didn't make any putts outside of 10 feet, but all the putts yesterday inside of 10 feet, he was perfect, 13 and 13. So if you can continue to putt that way, then he's going to have a chance to make, what is it, the 24th consecutive cut, which is a Masters record, and then he'll have an opportunity to be relevant once we get to Sunday, which is what everybody wants to see.
Smalls, you just made an insanely bold statement. You just said you would rather have Tiger Woods win a major this weekend, the Masters, than anything else in sports that you could choose.
Outside of my own personal fandom, right?
Like okay,
Illinois winning, anything like that. But the...
So that's the best... In your mind, that is the best possible story in sports right now.
The Tiger Woods winning another major and it's the Masters... He has such a magnetic pull. He's his own force field when it comes to not only golf, but sports in general. Watching Tiger Woods be in the hunt on 18 at the PGA Championship when it was in St. Louis was the most insane thing I've ever witnessed in person in sports. It was absolutely crazy the way the crowds followed him, the energy that he provides when he's in the mix. The fact that we've kind of the royal, we have kind of written him off as, okay, maybe he will be someone who can get back to competition, but we likely, because of the injuries and the state of the body, we don't know if he'll be able to endure a full weekend or really be able to get back there. If he could do that and do it at the Masters, the granddaddy of them all, what a story would that be?
I'm now trying to rack my brain, non-fandom, for a better possible realistic story in sports that could happen. Serena is technically retired, right? Because I would say Serena winning a Grand Slam would be bad. I love Serena.
Yeah, she's amazing.
So I would say her, but she's not playing, right? She's at home with her children and doing her other businesses. Is there any possible non-fandom, right? So you can't say the Lakers. Yeah. You can't say the any of the teams you played for. Is there a better possible story in sports?
Yeah, Tom Brady coming back at the end of the season for the San Francisco 49ers and helping them win a Super Bowl.
All right, we have a winner, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, he said don't count him out.
He left the door open, didn't
we
he?
We have
he left
a the winner.
Door open, didn't he?
He sounds bored.
Exactly.
Give him a call.
Hold on. Give me a minute. Now I'm just playing this out of my head. And shout out to Vic Blends, who we did the podcast with yesterday. He was great on social media, inspirational, the whole deal. Let me just play this out.
Yeah.
So how many? I don't want to do this to Brock Purdy, but how many games in are we talking? That Brady, we 12 games in.
I was going
to
say double digits for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, something
so
like
God
that.
God forbid. Let's spin it positive.
How about Joe Flacco style?
Okay, so but we still have to spin it negatively with the injury, but whatever. So yeah. Purdy's out. They're 9-3 at this point.
Yeah.
Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch, make that phone call.
Yeah.
Call Tom Brady. They say, Tom, we know you're hinting at this, and we know you love this team, and you went to all the games growing up. We kind of need you. And then he wins the Super Bowl with the San Francisco 49ers.
Yes.
To win number 8.
Yeah.
I don't know. I still think Tiger winning would be better.
Oh, my God. I'm like tearing up right now.
Football is king, though.
Football is king, and Tom Brady's the GOAT.
I guess the part that adds the drama with Tiger Woods under that scenario is that now he's tied with Jack Nicklaus for the most green jackets of all time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it's just like, okay, we've been calling Tiger Woods the GOAT, but now he actually has a resume where it actually is legitimate. He's got, you know, nobody has more, well, I guess it would be, nobody has more Masters green jackets than Tiger. I think Jack would still have one more major than Tiger, but that would be the scenario. So, I mean, yeah, that would probably be the thing that gives Tiger the edge over Tom Brady in that scenario, because Tom Brady's the GOAT whether he wins another one or not.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's the greatest of all time. Ain't nobody catching that.
Correct.
But, I mean, my mind is racing here. He's not necessarily considered the best individual player within team sports in our lifetime. Michael Jordan is still considered that, I think, for most of us.
Yes.
If your hypothetical happened, which literally as of 2 days ago would not fit in this conversation, but because Brady said yesterday, yeah, he'd consider that, it now fits in the conversation. He gets to 8 and wins with 3 teams, people would put him above Michael.
Why does Brady do that to us?
I know,
he's got a $300 million contract with another network to do the color on the play-by-play broadcast. Why does he do that to us?
It's giving Brett Favre.
Yeah, why are you doing this to us?
Wait a minute. How do we just spin this negatively?
I love Tom
Brady.
Don't
do this.
But pick a lane. Either you're retired or you're not. You know, this back and forth, like, is Ed Werder going to be on your lawn? I just don't. I don't know why he constantly does this. I understand the pull that he probably has for the game. And with all the quarterback injuries last year, I'm sure he's probably thinking, I'm in shape. I could still throw the ball. I could get back out there. When you love it that much and you've been that dedicated to it, when it's your life, I understand that it's hard to leave. But decide. Like, stop doing this 1 foot in, one out, keeping us. Let me rephrase that. Keeping Evan in emotional purgatory.
Yes.
I see it. Just do it.
He's ready to destroy me.
He's ready to destroy
me. That's
what
it is right now. Like, you just can't wait. You want this to happen now.
Oh, my God.
Just because
I'm so
you cracked
excited.
That door open, you want to run through
it. But you gave me a good
it.
Team, though.
You want to run through
the
it.
The Niners are really – because I was all in on the Niners last year.
Yeah.
I love Trent Williams.
Yeah.
Kyle Juszczyk. Oh, God. I love Purdy, but sorry, bro.
Here's how I can spin that scenario negatively for you. How bad does it look for Bill Belichick if Tom Brady comes
again,
back?
We're talking about
another one. You know what? Now we understand why Belichick doesn't have a job.
Uh-huh.
If Tom Brady gets off the couch and wins another championship.
Totally.
You know, this all
straight
was
from the barber chair to the Super Bowl.
No, no.
By the way, that was
talk about deep cuts.
That was the first time Tom Brady's been to a barber in about 100 years. He's going to salons. Let's be honest. There's a difference between the barber and the salon. But anyway.
You would know.
I would know.
It's the gated driveway on a gated street.
That's
I actually
right.
go to the barber, believe it or not. I don't know that there's a better scenario than what CeCe just presented. Smalls presented an amazing one. We can open it up to you guys as well. 888-SAY-ESPN. 888-729-3776 is the telephone number to be a part of our show. The best possible scenario that could happen in sports right now. Realistically, Smalls said if Tiger wins this weekend, that is the best thing realistically that could happen in sports. CeCe says, what about actually Brady following up on what he said yesterday and coming back late in the season and winning a title with the San Francisco 49ers. By the way, Bryson DeChambeau is leading the Masters.
Mm-hmm.
I feel no guilt whatsoever that we have waited 8 minutes to give the leader of the Masters because Tiger Woods made this sport. I'm sorry. Like, Tiger Woods deserves the attention, and then we can get to who's leading after that. And because every one of these golfers makes significantly more money and can support their family because of the attention, the branding, and the dollars that Tiger Woods has brought into the sport.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, best possible thing that could happen in sports? I'm not sure the Kentucky fan is saying Mark Pope is head coach, but and I'm not saying he's bad, and he's a former Kentucky player, but Pete Thamel of ESPN.com reports late yesterday, Mark Pope, BYU head coach, former Kentucky player, was on that 96 championship team, going to Kentucky, going to become their head coach. What do we think of this, guys?
Well, he doesn't have an NCAA tournament win, So I think he is a smart coach, especially from a tactical standpoint. I think that the style of play will be easy to recruit players. And obviously the Kentucky brand goes a long way as far as that's concerned. But John Calipari's resume was not good enough anymore for a lot of Kentucky fans. And I wonder if they're going to look at this situation and say the same thing about Pope. And after Nate Oates turned them down, after Dan Hurley turned them down, Jay Wright, Billy Donovan said he's committed to the Bulls. I wonder how the Kentucky fan is feeling today after so many big names that were tied to this job declined it.
I tried to tell him. I tried to tell you. I said the shine came off of the Kentucky men's basketball job. I told you that earlier this week. Kentucky basketball fans didn't want to listen. Oh, we're Kentucky. We can get whatever we want. They got to pick up the phone. Yeah, they answered the phone, and they probably told you no. They don't want your damn job. And now you're sitting here stuck with the Pope, who's supposed to be your new king of basketball, and I guess I just don't understand. I don't get it. A guy that hasn't won any NCAA tournament games is supposed to be the step in the right direction, coming off of a coach who couldn't get past the first weekend over the last several years. I don't get it. It lowers the profile in terms of the overall prestige of the program because you don't have that magnetic recruiter and that huge personality like Coach Calipari. And I don't understand why you go down the road of jettisoning Coach Cal if this is the coach that you end up landing on. Now, Mark Pope will probably get the benefit of the doubt because he's on one of the greatest college basketball team that ever existed, which is that 96 Kentucky Wildcats team. I heard Antoine Walker talking about it recently on a podcast. They had nine dudes play in the NBA, including Mark Pope. I mean, you had Tony Delk, Antoine Walker, Walter McCarty, Derek Anderson, Ron Mercer, Jeff Shepard, Wayne Turner, and Nazir Muhammad. That was an incredible team.
And a lot of those guys, I think, had close to double-digit NBA careers in terms of the number of years.
That was an incredible team. Like, that was the Untouchables. Like, those dudes were amazing. Mm-hmm. And so I guess being able to bring back some of that nostalgia is which will give him the runway in the honeymoon period. But after the first couple of years, when everybody comes back down to earth and realizes the state of affairs when it comes to the coach that you got rid of versus the coach that you hired, it just feels like this won't be good enough. And so that's why I'm highly skeptical of what the results will be and how, you know, Kentucky could potentially take a step forward with their program with Mark Pope as opposed to what they had in Coach Cal.
Kentucky made the exact same hire as Duke and North Carolina did. The process in getting there was night and day different. They hired a former player that was not a superstar. Hubert Davis was more of a superstar than John Shire, but you get what, and Mark Pope, but was not a superstar caliber player that they bring back to the program. Here's the difference. John Shire sat with Coach K for years, and they groomed him to be the head coach.
Yes.
Hubert Davis sat with Roy Williams for years, and they groomed him to be the head coach. Mark Pope did not sit with John Calipari for years to groom him to be the head coach. Now, he does have head coaching experience. It doesn't mean he's not going to be good. It just means when you allow to be out there all of the names that they allowed to be out there, from Danny Hurley to Billy Donovan to all these names, and this is the guy you end up with, it feels like a letdown. It does not mean he's going to be bad. From an X's and O's perspective, people rave about him. Mm-hmm. But CeCe, you mentioned what he did up until this point, and Smalls, you said that he doesn't have a tournament win. Go look at the resumes prior to arrival for John Calipari, Tubby Smith, Rick Pitino, and even Billy Gillespie, who was a disaster at Kentucky. Their resumes annihilate those of Mark Pope. Mark Pope, it's not that he doesn't deserve the job. It's probably one job removed from where he should be getting. Right? BYU should take you to the SEC. An SEC job should take you to Kentucky. Theoretically, in the past. But if you go based on what CeCe has said, they're just like everyone else now, and you can't look at them above everyone else. If we said Bruce Pearl gets Kentucky and Mark Pope got Auburn, all right, that's cool. That makes sense. Like, nobody's complaining about that. There was a job missing in between, it seems like.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. But then you look at all of the other coaches that told you no. I mean, Dan Hurley, Nate Oates, Billy Donovan. I mean, as of yesterday, I mean, Nate Oates and Dan Hurley aside, Mark Pope had the fifth best odds of any coach to land a Kentucky job. Like, there are other coaches that were in front of him in that line. And so it feels like you went with a consolation prize rather than landing the big fish. And that's not what the Kentucky men's basketball coaching job is supposed to be about. You're supposed to get the cream of the crop. And it certainly doesn't feel like they got that in this hire.
And also with a resume that doesn't necessarily stack up to some of the other people we discussed, I hope that Kentucky doesn't use that to try to control what's happening there? Because we know there's a lot of voices that want to be heard within the Kentucky, I guess we can call it organization, within the university. And I hope that they don't try to meddle too much because he doesn't have as much of a resume.
We are on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance. For a job you'll love, visit progressive.com/careers. Very busy day. You got the Masters, ESPN, ESPN Plus, all day today. Tiger is playing. Kentucky has a head coach. And one of the most complicated, tragic legacies in the history of sports needs to be discussed. We'll do that next. We're on Sportsmanlike on ESPN Radio.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Yesterday, we learned of the passing of O.J. Simpson, dying at 76 years old as a result of cancer. His family put out there, ABC News confirmed it yesterday. One of the most complicated, horrifically tragic lives we've ever seen in the sports and entertainment world. For people who are younger, and we have a lot of people on our show and who listen who are much younger, Pat Costello, Javonte Lawrence, were not really alive during the course of this that we were. Just to put it in perspective and context around OJ, you're talking about a person that was the best football player around by a lot, a Heisman Trophy winner at USC, goes to the Bills, unbelievable. And then when he's done with football, the best comparisons I can make, he becomes Michael Strahan in The Rock. That you don't have someone as an example of what they were able to accomplish post-playing as big as OJ was. So people understand that. Prior to June of 94.
He transcended football. He was into entertainment.
And every
pop culture.
Every brand wanted OJ. Every movie, Naked Gun and others, wanted OJ. Every network, Monday Night Football, it was on NBC with Costas and Marv Albert. Everybody wanted OJ to represent their brand.
To put a pin in that, I don't recall just listening to my parents talk about it and people that were of that generation. I don't recall them talking about any athlete that was pitching products and selling merchandise for companies before OJ. Mm-hmm. Like he was a pioneer. He was ahead of the curve when it came to athletes being able to monetize their athletic ability in that way.
He became a brand before a lot of athletes were even aware of being a brand.
No doubt about it. We attribute a lot of that to Michael Jordan, what happened with Nike in the 80s. But, I mean, OJ was a decade before that.
Yes.
He was a decade before that. Think about that. And think about the time that happened. This is the 70s. This is a very disruptive time. We're talking about, you know, less than a decade removed from the Civil Rights Act. And OJ was somebody that was widely accepted, universally loved because of what he did on the football field, but then also his persona and, quite frankly, his smile and how he looked.
Oh, but no, the smile is important because what we know of him now versus what he was then, we look at it totally differently, and he's, you know, he caused that. So we have this figure, this larger-than-life figure that transcended sports, that is in Hollywood, that is in entertainment, that is in our walk of lives on a daily basis, all of a sudden get accused of double homicide with his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend, Ronald Goldman. And we then have a police chase. We then have the NBA Finals interrupted because of a police chase with O.J. Simpson. Again, think Strahan and The Rock, which I'm not saying they would ever do something like this, but that's what people have to understand of post-athletic career. And the horrific acts that he allegedly committed, acquitted of later, then the trial of the century, which if you think about what happened there, because of that horrific tragedy with those two people passing, we are talking about the legal system reevaluated, race relations evaluated, reality television was started basically because of that. Court TV did not exist. We didn't have Twitter. We didn't have social media. The Kardashians, all because of that. This was, for people who don't understand, this was the single biggest thing arguably we've seen in our lifetime mm-hmm. in terms of day-to-day coverage and the branches off of this tragic tree.
I was young at the time of the trial, and I remember, I think I was in, I forget what grade I was in, like second or third grade, right? They rolled out TVs in the cafeteria, and they stopped school yeah. so that yep. the faculty could watch the verdict. And that is how I knew O.J. Simpson. I didn't know O.J. Simpson, the athlete. I didn't know O.J. Simpson, the actor, or the spokesperson, or the broadcaster. In my young life, my first encounter with O.J. Simpson was this trial. And I remember how it captivated every adult that was around me at that time. And, in, you know, obviously becoming an adult myself and watching all of that back, to think that 95 million people watched the Bronco Chase. To think that he was so prevalent in our culture and that this was such a big deal that it interrupted the NBA Finals.
Yep.
Can you imagine what sort of level of celebrity and how big of a deal it would have to be for that to happen now? And you unfortunately can't talk about one part of OJ without mentioning the other.
Yeah, that is overwhelmingly the biggest part of his legacy. Yes. It overshadows everything he did on the field, both at USC and with the Buffalo Bills. It overshadows everything he was as a pitchman, as a sportscaster, as a movie star. It overshadows all of those things because mm-hmm. of the time and space in which that incident occurred. You're talking about this trial happening in the wake of Rodney King, which was one of the biggest miscarriages of justice in the eyes of Black Americans across this country. And so when we had the O.J. Simpson trial happen and you see the reaction to the verdict come down along racial lines, it was a referendum on the criminal justice system and the difference in outcomes based on your skin color. Mm-hmm. And so that, I think, that dichotomy is why it was so captivating, because we were all drawn in on it, because there was an aspect of this thing where it was an association with one side or the other. It's like if you were in, you know, certain communities, you would say, hey, you know what, how can you trust the LAPD when it comes to making sure there isn't a miscarriage of justice? When it comes to other communities, which are like, look at the evidence. It's overwhelming in terms of, you know, what it points to in OJ being guilty. And so I think that's the part that made it fascinating, that made it captivating for everybody in this country, and why everybody feel like they had a vested interest in what the actual verdict was.
The tragedy in all of this is that for the last 24 hours or so, the Brown family and the Goldman family has to relive all of the tragedy that occurred, because we're all looking back and people are trying to find the best ways to describe this complicated, tragic legacy and all of the things that happened as a result of the trial of the century. Those two families had family members murdered. And that part, sadly, is always kind of left to the side in all of this. But O.J. Simpson dying at 76 years old, as complicated of a legacy as you're ever, ever going to see in all of sports.
You know what? It's not all that complicated, though, Ev. It's not. I mean, just because he's somebody that was viewed as a sports hero doesn't mean that he's a good person.
Oh, and I think we've confirmed that.
And I think that's the lesson in all of it. Like, we've had people that have been really good in sports be close to murders. We've had players in sports that have killed people. And they continue to play in sports. They continue to have careers. I mean, wasn't Ray Lewis on trial for murder? Now, he wasn't found guilty. He was acquitted, but he had a murder trial.
Aaron Hernandez.
I mean, we've seen it over and over. Little killed somebody with a DUI and continued to play football in the NFL. This happened. So it just goes to show you, just because you're good at a sport, just because you might be a good pitchman when it comes to products, doesn't mean that you're a good person.
I 100% agree. In the case of OJ, he was billed as a good person. That's the complication in all of this. That was a guy that was billed as a good person, more than just a pitchman and an athlete. But you're 1,000%
well,
right.
I mean, here's the thing. He was billed as a good person. This is a very difficult conversation for me to have. But he was non-threatening in a time when prominent Black athletes were challenging the establishment. So think about O.J. Simpson, then think about Bill Russell, then think about Muhammad Ali, then think about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So you're saying he was billed as a good person, whereas a lot of people in the Black community say this was a guy that was widely accepted because he was non-threatening when it came to challenging the status quo. with racism and prejudice in this country. So you say good person, I say non-threatening. There is a clear difference.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying he was a good person. I'm saying he's billed as, but
it, no, it's that's just what I'm saying. You're saying he's billed as a good person. I think he was billed as somebody that was non-threatening. He was a non-threatening black guy.
But this is a good lesson, though.
And he was able to monetize that. Remember, I'm not black. I'm OJ. Remember that.
Yeah, no, he said that.
That happened.
But it's a good lesson because if we were going to look at people like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Bill Russell.
And Jim Brown.
And
everybody that
well,
was
I'm going to leave Jim Brown out.
Everybody that was at the Cleveland Summit.
But Bill Russell and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, if people were to turn away from them because they're challenging, look at who they are and were versus who OJ was.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe listen to a couple of people here and there that are challenging a thought on the way in which we operate our country in a healthy way, like Bill Russell and like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. All right. No easy way to transition off of that. We will try to do so coming up. It's Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance. Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus. Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
More twists and turns with the Shohei Ohtani story. Yesterday, we learned more about this from U.S. Attorney Martin Estrada, who made this announcement to the media.
Our investigation has revealed that due to the position of trust he occupied with Mr. Ohtani, Mr. Mitsuhara had unique access to Mr. Ohtani's finances. Mr. Mitsuhara used and abused that position of trust in order to take advantage of Mr. Ohtani. Mr. Mitsuhara used and abused that position of trust in order to plunder Mr. Ohtani's bank account to the tune of over $16 million.
So there have been reports through all of this and that the U.S. Attorney's Office released that Mitsuhara averaged 25 bets a day between $10 per bet and $160,000 per bet. 19,000 bets won, $142 million won, and $183 million lost.
Well, damn.
That's minus $40.6 million is what happened here. Bank records were changed by Mizuhara. He called the bank allegedly pretending to be Ohtani. He blocked out the financial advisors and the accountants from Ohtani's account. And he admitted to the bookmaker on text that he had stolen from Ohtani. That's it.
So when did he have time to actually be the interpreter for Ohtani?
It's lucky Ohtani doesn't talk to the media much. Nothing to translate.
25 bets a day? 25 bets a day? You think you got a problem? That is the opposite of gambling responsibly. Like, this dude is $40 million in debt to a bookmaker in Southern California.
$40 million.
$40 million. Dollars. That is absolutely insane. And Smalls, I keep coming back to this. First of all, it seems incredibly odd that a financial institution would allow this type of impropriety to take place.
Exactly.
But even beyond that, for Major League Baseball to be in a situation where you have this type of figure that's capable of fraud at this scale, being so close to one of your stars and having behind-the-scenes access to one of the most visible franchises in the entire sport is absolutely ridiculous. Like, shame on Ipe Matsuhara for doing what he did to Shohei Ohtani. But shame on Major League Baseball for not vetting the interpreter for what was going to be one of the most celebrated figures to enter Major League Baseball in decades. I just don't know how this type of person is allowed to have access, to have information to the club's game plans, to roster construction, all of the goings on, all of the things that players and coaches would be privy to in those meetings behind the scene. How can you let that kind of figure that is capable of fraud at this scale with gambling to be associated with your sport?
That is one of the many questions I still have in all of this. It does seem like Ohtani really was taken advantage of in a lot of ways, which I can't even imagine how he feels in the wake of all of this. But for Mitsuhara to tell Ohtani's financial advisors and his accountants, because none of them speak Japanese, so he's the voice here for Ohtani, that Ohtani had denied them access to the account, and no one questions it in any way. The fact that the bank just allows this to go through and doesn't question it in any way. I have a lot of questions for people that didn't question this or that didn't provide more protection for somebody like Shohei Ohtani. I know that Mitsuhara was the interpreter, so there is some degree of deference to what he says, but I would want to say, okay, wait a minute, let me get another person in here that can translate, or let me find a way to try to communicate with Ohtani, because if these sums of money are being taken out and I'm just relying on this one person's word and not speaking to the person directly tied to the account who's earned the money, I just can't understand how that can happen, that this many people can just allow the interpreter to take these sums of money. Also, the fact that he's betting $160K all the way down to $10. Like, I wonder what he's putting $10 on.
Right?
If you're betting $160,000, like, what bet was so insignificant that you were just going to throw $10 on it?
I guess the other part of this that we don't know about is we don't know what the bets were on, right? Like, we don't know if he was betting on Dodgers game.
Or he was not betting on baseball.
The federal government said he wasn't betting on baseball.
He was not betting on baseball.
Okay. So, I mean, I just want to be clear with all of this. None of us are questioning Ohtani, or are we questioning Ohtani in a non-legal sort of way? Like, meaning, a lot of people have brought up the idea, how do you not notice that that money is out of your bank account, et cetera, et cetera. I think we can all get to the place that he's not complicit in this, but is he ignorant in this? Is he willfully ignorant in this?
I don't know if he's willfully ignorant. I think it's clear that he's ignorant, or at the very least naive, but that's not unlike other professional athletes. How many horror stories do we hear about financial advisors or agents taking advantage of guys that are focused on competing at the highest level of the sport? It takes a lot to be a professional athlete in terms of your focus, what you're locked in on. It's tunnel vision in order to have success at that level of the sport. And so it's not surprising to hear that Shohei Ohtani took his eye off the ball, pun intended, when it comes to his finances. He's trusting the people around him, and based on all accounts, Ipe Matsuhara is supposed to be his dog. So he's not thinking that this is a guy that's going to, you know, commit this level of fraud, that's going to misrepresent himself and pretend that he's Shohei Ohtani to these banks, to these financial institutions that are supposed to be safeguarding Ohtani's financial interests. It's not surprising that somebody close to the athlete would be taking advantage of them for financial gain. What's surprising is the scale and the involvement with Major League Baseball, because this guy is an employee of Major League Baseball teams.
A lot of people failed him.
Yeah.
A lot of people failed Shohei Ohtani.
It's different than the typical athlete that gets taken advantage of. Usually it's somebody in the athlete's camp. It's an agent. It's a financial advisor. It's a family member. None of which draw a paycheck. None of which get a W-2 from a franchise in pro sports. And that's the difference. And that's why I think Major League Baseball, in a roundabout way, is culpable when it comes to what's taking place with Shohei Ohtani. And I got to say this, Ev, I am shocked that there is not more done when it comes to Major League Baseball providing security, providing intelligence for the people that are privy to the kind of access that the interpreter Ipe Matsuhara had.
Can you give us as much as you can on when you were playing the people around you? Like, I'm sure you had different financial people and agents and representatives that were privy to private information of yours. How did you go about picking those people and making sure that they were on the up and up?
Well, I used the resources that I had. So remember, my college coach was Al Groh, somebody that had been in the NFL. And one of the things that he did while I was in college is that he brought agents and financial advisors to the University of Virginia. So you're able to establish a relationship as an athlete and with your family with these individuals. And so
he was vouching for them.
He was vouching for them, but then you had an opportunity to do your due diligence, do your research on these people, vet them in that way, and then you invite them to be a part of your team. So that's how it happens for me, and I'm sure that most athletes have a similar story because you have to trust somebody, and you usually trust that coach from high school or that coach from college to put you around the right people mm-hmm. that are going to protect your interests. But I guess the part where I say Major League Baseball failed is that how can you then not vet this person that is going to be around, that's going to be in the dugout, that's going to be at all of these meetings? How do you not have more insight into the character of this individual? How can you allow that to happen? This is like with NFL security does background checks on all of these people. Like
on everybody like that?
Yeah. You can ask the NFL security to do a background check on a financial advisor or a background check on an agent if you wanted to. Those are the resources that are available to you. I just don't understand how Major League Baseball is not taking more ownership of that process when it comes to people that are privy to access behind the scenes with these clubs.
I bet they will now.
They better.
Well, based on what you just said, I think that any player that did not grow up in the United States that has people around them that would not come from, as you said, a college program, a minor league program, or whatever, baseball needs to look into. If there are any other translators or people that have access to the players with a lot of money that haven't been around, like an Al Groh, like you said, yeah. Vet them now.
How does this dude say he went to a college and then come to find out the college says they have no record of him ever being there? Mm-hmm. How does he have a job with you if he's saying he went to this school in California and the school says, no, we have no record that he was ever there? How does he get a job for you?
Right. Long story short, speaking two languages does not mean you should have a job as a translator. It means you speak two languages. That's like you need to actually vet people that are working for you, right? Oh, I speak two languages. Great. What about everything else in your life? Are you going to steal $16 million from the person that you're working with? Just a crazy, crazy story here. All right, let's do something positive now. Let me tell everybody about True Green because I love a beautiful lawn. You think I'm doing lawn care? You think I know what I'm doing? Think about that. Me mowing a lawn, me watering a lawn? Okay, maybe, but the rest of it, all of the treatment that's needed? Yeah, I can't do that. That's why I use True Green. They're the official lawn treatment provider of the PGA Tour. We all know those are some nice greens. Certainly seen them this weekend in Augusta. So just imagine what they could do to your lawn. All you have to do is water and mow. That's it. And to top it off, when you sign up for an annual plan by April 20th, get one application free. Visit TrueGreen.com for the best lawn at the best price guaranteed. Restrictions apply.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Is it wrong that I haven't stopped thinking about Brady to the Niners winning a title?
Yes, it's wrong.
Okay. Nice to see everybody.
There we go.
Well, I mean, Small said the best possible thing that could happen in sports realistically right now is Tiger winning the Masters. CC combats that with, what if Brady actually were to come back, as he hinted at yesterday, for the Niners late in the season, his hometown team, and win a title? So I'm just, it's in my head. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Best possible realistic thing that could happen in sports. How about this one? This is very possible, very realistic. that the Denver Nuggets win their second straight NBA championship. We're in a back-to-back era right now. UConn, right, and the Chiefs. That the Denver Nuggets win their second straight championship and Nikola Jokic wins another MVP. My whole earpiece just fell apart.
Yeah, got a lot going on.
Yeah,
right
I got
now.
A lot going on.
A lot going on.
Well, Jokic did speak to ESPN about this, motivated to repeat as champions.
I mean, to be honest, we are defending the title against every team since we play the whole season. You know, they always want to be the beat the champion, and I think we want to be the better team that we were last year. So I mean, we have opportunity, we have a chance. We will see in our playoffs. Is like I said, the rest is really, really, really tough. So hopefully, we can do something.
How high does he go in terms of the all-time rankings? If we play out that he wins a second championship and a third MVP.
Well, I think him winning the second championship is going to matter, all right? Because when you start to put the three MVPs into context, there have only been eight NBA players to have three or more MVPs in the history of the game. And all of those guys, except for Moses Malone, have multiple championships. So in order to validate the individual accolades, you've got to have the team hardware to show for it. And I think winning that championship is going to matter. And if you look at the landscape of the NBA, particularly the Western Conference, Jokic and the Denver Nuggets better get it while it's getting as good. Because you got all of these young teams that are on the come, OKC, the Minnesota Timberwolves, you've got the New Orleans Pelicans. There are a lot of young upstart teams, not to mention the Boston Celtics, big, you know, that duo in Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum growing into their own. So this feels like the opportune time for Jokic, being at the height of his powers, to go ahead and add that second championship. That way you can have the multiple championships to accompany having three MVPs.
Yeah, if he gets another one, we're changing how we talk about him a historical perspective, right? I would imagine if he gets another MVP and another title, we are moving him up in the ranks, certainly of the modern players that we consider to be the greatest. He's in that conversation, right?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, if he wins another championship, he's going to win the MVP, but if he wins another championship this year, I'm all ready to say he surpasses Kevin Durant in terms of legacy.
All right, let's go here for a second.
I'm already ready to say that.
Wow.
Like that, in terms of his impact and what he's capable of doing as a player and leading to team success and beyond that, just the leadership aspect of Jokic's game, how he goes about his business. I'm already ready to say that he surpassed Kevin Durant in terms of overall legacy. You're talking about a guy that would be top 15 in the history of the NBA. You have to have that conversation. Mm-hmm. He would have the accolades to support it. So, I mean, I know people want to be critical of Jokic, and because of what it looks like, the package that it's wrapped in, you don't want to assign a certain level of success to him or a certain level of impact to him. But we got to come to this place where we acknowledge how good this dude is. He is the best player in the sport. I don't think that's debatable now.
No.
He's the best player in the sport, and he has been the last couple of years.
He's dominant.
So let's just do the modern part, the modern comparisons. Let's talk about the LeBron era of the NBA, right? So what we need to figure out, Tim Duncan, Kobe Bryant obviously played against LeBron. Tim Duncan played against LeBron twice in the NBA Finals. I do not look at Tim Duncan and LeBron necessarily in the same era. So I don't either. Okay, so we're gonna separate Duncan, Kobe, Dirk, Kevin Garnett. We're going to put them in a previous era. Are we in agreement on that?
Yes, sure.
Okay,
absolutely.
So LeBron and Steph are 1 and 2, right? Are we in agreement on that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The question is, the third best player of this era, is Jokic that? Is Kevin Durant that? Some people may look at Giannis as that. We obviously have individual numbers for James Harden that are ridiculous. I don't think that anybody's going to put him necessarily third.
Hell no.
So
no.
Is Jokic then the third best player of the LeBron era in the NBA? Kevin Durant is obviously the one that probably has the best fight, and Giannis against him.
I think you have to give the nod to Jokic. Especially if he wins another one. And I think while we're having this conversation about Jokic and Denver, concurrently watching Kevin Durant go to Brooklyn and not have it work out. Phoenix, It doesn't look great. It doesn't look like it's going to reach the level of expectation that we had outlined it to be. I think Jokic being dominant during that stretch where we see Kevin Durant have more questions than answers and his post-Golden State career certainly helps Jokic's case here.
Yeah, I think it's Jokic, barring something unforeseen. Now, the thing that I'm thinking of that's unforeseen is the Los Angeles Clippers going on a championship run, because now all of a sudden Kawhi Leonard enters the chat.
Three with three different teams.
Three with three different teams.
Yeah.
Like, equals LeBron. Uh-huh.
Yeah, like
in that category.
Yeah, like, I mean, exactly. Three with three different teams, and he would have beaten LeBron head to head. Because he's the one that won Finals MVP in that last championship that the Spurs won against the Miami Heat, correct?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, I just wanted to
point that out. And by the way, the Kawhi resume ended the Heat Big Three. A lot of people...
Ended the Golden State Warriors dynasty.
As we knew it, that way.
As constituted with Kevin Durant.
Yeah. And now, I don't know... Well, how about this? I'll give you one. Even though they didn't win a title, how about if he beats Boston and they break up the team afterwards in the finals? Because Boston's...
That would happen.
They've had a run.
And then, oh, by the way, keep Jokic from being able to go back-to-back.
Kawhi's got that spoiler alert kind of thing.
Kawhi is like... Yeah. He's not there right now. Like, I would say it's Jokic, then KD, behind LeBron and Steph in this era, but... Kawhi could jump up significantly if he gets another championship.
His regular season stuff hurts him, though. He's never won an MVP. That hurts him.
Yeah,
and I love Kawhi.
But I mean, he would have been the best player on three different championship teams.
No doubt.
Because of the demeanor of Kawhi and Jokic, we don't necessarily talk about them the same way that we talk about some of these other guys.
No.
You said it's the way that the package looks.
Yeah.
We don't automatically think of Kawhi when we talk about LeBron, when we talk about Steph. And he absolutely should be in that conversation. But we don't bring him up because of who he is and how he presents himself.
Yeah, you're right about it. But here's the thing. The Nuggets have been so dominant. I mean, they're unbelievable at home. I just, with them having home court advantage, and they're going to get it because of who they play. You're talking about games against the Memphis Grizzlies. And I think they have the final game against... Yeah, the San Antonio Spurs, like those are the dregs of the NBA. They're going to run away with it. They're going to have the number one seed. And for somebody to go into Denver and win in a seven-game series, I think that is so unlikely, so improbable. So, yeah, I think they're going to waltz to the NBA Finals. Now, there might be some drama in theater in terms of who they got to do it against, but – they will be in the NBA Finals because they have the number one seed in the West.
And if that happens, he does get to number three. I think that's pretty clear on that in that LeBron Steph rankings. We're Unsportsmanlike.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.